Awesome. Perfect.
Okay, we are recording. Well, thanks everybody for joining us today. Tom and I were, you know, kind of joking about this idea of, hey, let's talk about some fun stuff from the good old days. And, you know, a client was talking about their recent implementation of an AS 400, and that just brought back memories to Tom. Just to give a bit of context, Tom and I are partners on you know, taking technology to the world of manufacturing. Tom will get a chance to introduce himself, but we, you know, he runs Valcreate marketing and sales solutions, and I run Integral software. So we've done some interesting work together, mainly in the planning and scheduling. We've launched PlanBoard together, and yeah, that's how we've kind of been talking regularly, and that's what brings us to AS400. So with that, I'll let Tom introduce himself too, and then we'll just jump right into it.
Yeah, well, thank you, Sam, for hosting this event. This is really great, a great topic to talk about, the AS400. I think anybody that's been involved in manufacturing over the years has come in contact with this. Just a little bit of my background. Yes, as the CEO of Valcreate, my goal is to help companies make the transition to Industry 4.0. So it's helping with the technology, and that's where we partner together, connecting the digital to the physical world of manufacturing. My background, though, is all manufacturing and operations. So really not coming from the tech side, more learning the tech side throughout my career, more in management of operations, building factories, leading teams. And that's why I find technology so fascinating, because it can help with all those things. And that's really a great topic and segue into the AS400. So I guess first question, Sahand, AS400, what are the different nicknames you have heard it called? So for me, it was always the green screen.
Yes. The green screen. But I didn't, you know what, I've heard of the green screen, but I actually didn't know that it was an AS400 nickname, because my first touching of a computer outside of, I was telling this to somebody the other day, I had a good friend, still a good friend, from almost 40 years ago. So we've known each other for a long, long time. I'm not even that, you know, I'm 41. So maybe I've known him for 35 years. And my first experience with computers was him not letting me touch his 286 that was black and white. And he played Tetris on it, or 3D Tetris. And I was just so fascinated by computers and programming. I'd learned about DOS 3.02 off of a pamphlet, and I didn't have a computer. So, you know, I was just reading papers and learning BASIC and DOS. And then meanwhile, this guy had a computer. I couldn't touch it. But that was the first one. And then the second time I touched a computer was on VMS machines, I believe, or VAX VMS machines. So that was green screen for me. But yeah, anyway, I haven't heard of any other nicknames. So what else have you heard of?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, because you always, nowadays, you're in some kind of a Windows interface, so you have to go through like a remote terminal. So sometimes just like the terminal, the green screens, there's usually some kind of a nickname within the company for what it is. AS400, So actually, I was doing a little research, you know, prior to this, and, you know, so the AS400 was the old mainframe computer itself, right? Probably what I've come into contact with in this millennium was just the OS400, right, which was the actual operating system that used to be on those old systems, but now are more modern hardware, which you would see on the server. So, but yeah, I mean, AS400 is kind of like the generic term for that I see probably the most. Yeah, I know green screen was a popular one, which is ironic too, because it's a green text on a black background, but like I'm 100% certain, it's been a long time, but you could change the color of whatever you wanted to, if you wanted to be red or whatever. So,
well, nowadays, my terminal, it's like I'm a Mac guy, right? So whenever I get a, you know, new machine for a new client, or sometimes it's just my own new machine, it's like one of the first things I do is I turn the terminal green on black, even though these like retina displays is like, you know, hundreds of millions of colors. Meanwhile, we go back to the basics. But you know what, the green screen, I think for me at least, but you know, not a good barometer for the general cooler public, but the movie Matrix in 99 kind of brought the green screen into into vogue, and it was cool, and back in the day you had no option but to have the green screens, right? Because you've got phosphor based CRT cathode ray tube CRT terminal. I don't even remember the acronym. But it was green on black. You couldn't do anything about it,
and it worked. And I think that's the biggest part of that nostalgia when it comes to the AS400 systems. Is like, for me, it was like, walking into to the factory is like, that's what was used. And to date it a little bit, back then, like, used to always smoke on the factory floor too. So very different time period, right? This isn't something that, people nowadays, maybe forget. But I also think, so for me, it's a nostalgia. For some people, it's still a reality, right? 30 years on, still using it, right? There's still people using it. So it just shows you, I think, the testament to the system. I think for me, the biggest things when I think about it was that, honestly, it never glitched or crashed. I think that was like the biggest thing. It was very fast. And because of the way it was structured, the operating system, you really had to stay within the guardrails that were set up, input only certain commands, get certain data. So it was very, very clean from that standpoint. Versus we look at a lot of ERPs now, they're a lot more complicated. There's a lot more glitches. So I think that's where that nostalgia comes in, right? Like, when I think about those AS400 systems, like, they were easy. Whatever mistake you did as the operator, you could go back and fix, and didn't require a lot of additional IT help from the operator standpoint. So I think that's part of the nostalgia for me. I think that while doing some research about it, I guess the AS400 when it first came out, it was a hit right away. I think in the 1990s it did 14 billion in revenue, which back then, like, 14 billion would be a lot. I think by the year 2000, there were over 500,000 machines in the field. So again, it's just like, it got really, really popular. And I was even this is really interesting. In the year 1993, I think IBM was going through some times where it looked like it might be split up.
Right.
And Microsoft, Bill Gates, made the comment that the only part of IBM that they would be interested in purchasing was the AS400 division.
Wow.
Which is crazy to think about. And here's the craziest reason, because Microsoft was using AS400 for their own internal businesses. That's obviously, before Windows, before everything really, really took off for Microsoft. They have their own ERPs now. So it's insane. So we're not the only ones, I think, that have that nostalgia about it. I think too, for me, the biggest thing that, because of the software, how it was really rigid, how you had to input information in and what screens you could go to, it really lended well towards creating macros. Right. And, for an operations person, macros like a poor man's coding, right? So, like, you could put some logic in, you could figure out how to automate some of this manual data entry. And with the AS400 system, it was really, really accurate. And one of my earliest interactions with the system was in a assembly line, and the manager that was in charge of materials, for years he was trying to coordinate between the assembly line and the laser cutting machine. So the laser cutting machine would make stuff in batches, right? Cut a lot of pieces. And then the assembly line would make to order products, right? So there was some coordination that needed to happen there. And the challenge was that he couldn't get the system to do it. Every time he would go to IT for years, like, he just couldn't get the message across. They couldn't help him out with it. So that was one of my first jobs in the factory. I would use these AS400 screens and I would go in and I would look at what was on order, what was going to go down the assembly line,
right,
pull up the bill of materials, and then create a list for the laser cutting machine. And I would like hand that list to the laser cutting machine. And I was doing this for a few months, and some of the things I did, I documented how I did it, right? So I created work instructions how to do it. And then the longer I was doing it, that's when I like fell in love with macros, right? So I started using macros, and all of a sudden, you know, I could pull up a whole week's schedule, you know, within minutes, right? And create that. And the best part of all that, right? So they formed a very robust system, easy to do macros, very accurate. The information's there, easy to be pulled. Was once I documented all that and I gave all the macros and the code to my boss, then he had a meeting with the IT, and within that day, within hours of having that meeting, they were able to do it because they had the roadmap exactly of what to do.
Right.
And I thought, well, that was what was incredible about that is I've tried to take that same approach with some other ERPs and not getting anywhere.
Beauty of what you just described, and I watched a few videos of tutorials, is, you know, it is like Excel, or I will use another Microsoft. I wouldn't call myself a fanboy, because as a matter of fact, don't do any development on the Microsoft stack typically, but there's some stuff that I have a lot of respect for. One being Access. Now you're going to kind of, and the first time I touched it, I was like, oh my goodness, this is just brutal. Why? But then you kind of dig deep and you realize, okay, yeah, it's not the most robust, it's a makeshift database and UI. Now, AS400, from what I saw, is like way more robust from a client server point of view. But Access allows you to define tables and databases, really just tables, and then define macros or queries, and then pair it with a screen that's sort of a Windows, 90s style Windows screen. And what I saw in AS400, which I was, very fascinated by, is that it's the same paradigm. And by the way, it's basically the same paradigm as what we do in our, in our day-to-day life of building, server code. Instead of AS400, we build it with SQL and Python and, what have you. But conceptually, it just really allows you, it pairs down the UI, text only. I love command line. I love text only because it just gets rid of the, maybe old school, but it gets rid of the noise, right? You have a very restricted way of getting your information. So it makes you think through how to do it best. Of course, it's going to make it really hard for anybody to kind of do something with it. But once you know how to do stuff, because you're working with a very reduced set of records and reduced set of functionality, you can do things really well, right? So that's what I gathered. I have not actually, funny enough, I've never touched an AS400 system, personally, but I was seeing the tutorials, and the guy has kind of taken us through joining of, is it called joining? Anyway, he was talking about like taking data from sales data from one file and then overlaying the sales rep table on top of it, so you could have the sales rep's name on the sales file. And he was going through the whole thing, and I'm like, oh yeah, this is the SQL join you're doing. And then the different conditions he was talking about was, one, it was a inner join, the other one was a left join. And I was like, yeah, okay, I get it. These are same concepts, just, different name for them, really, right? But conceptually, it's still looked like a relational database, and from what I saw, right?
Absolutely. And I think too, you brought up about, the commands and using commands and text and prompt. And, what's interesting, so when I was getting into the business, there basically would be these, I'd say like knowledge gurus, but knowledge gurus on what the commands are for that particular AS400 database that the company was using. So it was like, because you knew like, if I hit, VR40, it's going to take me to the inventory of this facility. And it literally was kind of like that, that very much like in manufacturing, today we talk about the skill gap, right? Where the old school mentality, like when I was starting out, was like you wouldn't show anybody how to do the job because you'd be afraid they'll take your job. All right. And it was a lot like that with the AS400. It was like you had people that knew the commands, knew the screens, knew the shortcuts, right? And then they could process all this data on this antiquated system, right? Where like you couldn't Google it, right? Like you couldn't Google like how to use it because it was unique to every company. And that in itself like became like a specialization, right? I'm not talking about the IT side, I'm not talking about the programming, I'm talking about the users, right? Like knowing which menu to go to, how to process different functions. So it was literally like these old timers that were there when AS400 was implemented and they knew the systems, and like there was just like this skill gap that went through.
Oh, sorry, Tom. Didn't mean to distract you with that, but there's some questions that have come in, so we'll go through that sort of fun stuff too. But maybe one of them that I didn't put in the chat is what was the most fun situation in which I don't know, that has to do with AS400, and I don't know if I'm asking the question right, but anyway, let's just see what's a yeah. The maybe not weird, like fun. I don't know. What pick your criteria for defining fun that had to do with AS400.
So I'll say a funny situation.
Yeah.
From the perspective at the time, maybe it wasn't that funny, but kind of building on what I talked about earlier about macros. I had one area inside of a factory where I was responsible for processing scrap. So anything that got damaged, that was no longer usable, had to be processed out of inventory, right? So for accounting purposes, it can be written off. And then we would recycle it and then, you know, go through that process. But on the AS400, we had to take care of the accounting piece, right? To capture the value of the material and to process it. So this was a big factory, and we were processing a lot of scrap. And it really became like a tedious task, right, to do this accounting piece. So wrote some macros, right? Like, because I'm actually really good at macros. So I wrote some macros, and
there's a theme here. Yep.
Yeah
macros here. That's our next talk, by the way.
That's our next topic,
macros, yeah. Macros, and I got some sick Excel macros to show you. Anyway, that's another topic for another conversation.
Exactly. Like, I mean, to me, the macros are the programming for people that don't know how to program, right? Like, if you're a user, like, you know, keystrokes, you know, like you can use macros. So that's the theme. But I wrote these macros, and they were good. We were using them all the time, but. At that point, like, I handed it over to the team. The team was using them. They would have to input some information, right, into the macro and then let it run throughout the day as they were processing the information. And it all worked really well until one of the team members accidentally threw a typo, like threw off like a decimal point. So here it comes. So... they were running these macros, and I don't remember how long it went for, but because they're off by decimals, instead of scrapping out like, I don't know, $50,000 worth of material, we were scrapping like $1 million, right? And
ouch.
I think the reason that I even caught it is because I was doing some other reporting, like just in general, using the same system, and like all of a sudden I saw this like huge dollar amount, like what the heck is going on? So the funny situation was like there was like no way to like quickly correct it. You had to like individually go to each item. So like at one point I had like three people sitting around a desk on green screens, right? This is big corporate America, so you don't want anybody to find out. So they're going through, and they're just going through the data, reversing every transaction. And I remember I had my boss at the time came by, and they're like, "Hey, what's going on over here?" I was like, "Man, we found a problem, but we're fixing it." You know, comes back like an hour later. No, seriously, what's going on
here? That was your meta macro. Getting the three programmers to do everything.
Yeah, there's just like going to town. So. So there you go. That's the perfect example for our next conversation about macros, the dangers of macros. Yeah, yes, there's like no stopgap. Once you get keyboard, mouse clicks, it can really go wild. But yeah, I think that was probably my funniest experience. At the time, it was like very nerve-wracking going through, but I just remember, you know, my boss coming by and just being like, no, seriously, like, what's going on? Like, he could just tell, because like, because everybody had that, moment, right? Like, yep. That, oh no, like we messed up. So, I mean, it was just like everybody was going in, like pulling people from other work areas. Like, here, I need you to go in and, you know, here's a list. Like, and it was just, it was just one of those things where, be careful of macros. It's a very powerful tool, but it can be. It's better to get the right software, get the right software integrator, do it properly. Think it
through. Yeah, and automation and systems applied to the wrong way, or applied to the expression is building an efficient system on top of incorrect or garbage, it'll generate garbage in a systematic and automated way, right? So you want to be careful about what those decimal places are in the macro. My funny almost encounter, and now I look back and I'm like, maybe I should have encountered with AS400 was just having graduated from university, and I was working at a semiconductor company programming all that sort of stuff, right? And I had a buddy who was I think he was a bartender on a cruise ship. Okay. So I didn't know. So he rolled into town and we were just partying. And this guy's like, life is amazing. We go from port to port, tons of fun. At ports, we can get off, and even though they're staff at ports, they can have some time off, roll off, and it's just a phenomenal experience. I've seen so many cities in the world. I'm like, this is amazing. I'm just so jealous. He's like, well, actually, the guys who have the best gigs on this, this is amazing for me. The guys who have the best gigs are the IT personnel on these ships, because it's a city. It still needs to be run. Uh-huh. So you've got a couple of guys who are, of course, when push comes to shove, and, there's a lot of value to what they do, of course, push comes to shove, you got to be up and maintaining systems. But hopefully, most of the time, things are running smoothly. So you kind of are just enjoying yourself and, on a cruise ship, and then you go from town to town. And I was like, this sounds amazing. Maybe I should, stop my career in software development and go into IT specifically for cruise ships. He's like, yep, the only thing you got to know is you got to know how to deal with an AS400. I was like, what is AS400? I go look it up. I'm like, yeah, I don't, it's maybe not, maybe. So that's my almost close encounter with AS400. Anyway, it was a big miss. I could have been, I could have been on a cruise ship right now talking to you.
There you go. No, and it's incredible to think about, because that just shows you how robust of a system it was. And I think that's, because like on a ship, you're out there by yourself on an island, right? Like you can't have something freeze up, right? Like lives are at stake when you're out at sea. So I think it's a testament, again, to the system's robustness. But I guess, the real question is, all right, is it just nostalgia, or, what in today's world? So, because I think if you kind of summarize outside of the nostalgia, right, is that kind of robustness, the fact that it's you can really make it rigid and how the input's put in. So if you are looking for that today, right, if you're the modern cruise ship, or you're the modern factory, like, what is equivalent today out there, right? Like, what, I mean, like, we know the big players on ERPs, right? It's SAP, Microsoft, Oracle. I don't know if I left anybody off, but I think those are like the industry standard, and they all have medium market and small market affiliates or versions for smaller companies. But like, do any of them really market the like robustness You know, like that's my, I guess my thing is like, if you're looking for that, what does that look like today? Now, I know you can still buy the operating system or like, I guess there's people still using it, but at the same time, being a technology minded consultants and advisors, like there's a lot of nostalgia, but like, I mean, you know, you can't really connect with the multimedia world, like videos, pictures. We're not even talking about augmented reality, data from IoT. I mean, like that system just wouldn't play in mobile, right? Like, I mean, I guess you could maybe somehow access it on mobile, but it's not really a mobile application, right? So, you know, what do you think is the out there? Like, what's, if you're looking for that same reliability, you're that ship out in the middle of the sea. Like, what is it? Like, what would you go for? Like, what is the software that's the most reliable?
You know, honestly, I think there's so two things. One is very recently, the reason we're having this conversation when I brought it up a few weeks ago is a friend and a partner who we've done some work with just recently was looking into consolidating their multiple factory ERP system. And through a bunch of rounds of, you know, selection criteria and looking at different vendors, they did go with an AS400 based ERP system. So even like in 2022, yeah. Just about to say 2021, but my years are off. In the middle of 2022, they're doing an AS400 implementation. AS400 based implementation, mm-hmm. the ERP that's on it. So, you know, robustness is there. And the one thing I wanted to also mention is it's a pendulum, right? Like we have had so much advances, and these are amazing advances in the world of data, you know, server side technology, DevOps, all that stuff. And it is phenomenal. It's just like, you know, in the late 90s with the fiber optics and all the infrastructure. Right now you're seeing it with the crypto infrastructure, quantum infrastructure. What, in my opinion, sometimes gets overlooked is, great, you have access to every single tick, microsecond of a, you know, IoT device in your factory might be generating a signal. Great, fantastic. And there's great vendors who let you pull that data in. But I wonder if there's enough thinking from a high level exerted to the problems of, so what? Now we have a trillion data points per day coming in, and this is fantastic. And we've, you know, we're now paying, you know, a bajillion dollars a year for cloud providers to give us that data. Great. But what do we do with it? Right. And did we really need it? So I think that's an area where back in the day, because the resources were limited and it was expensive, I don't even want to know, you know, how much these implementations cost, right? Because we try to serve our customers in a very reasonable, you know, kind of low cost way as much as we can. But anyway, you know, because the resources were so limited, you know, you didn't fathom to do a checklist of 30 things the system was supposed to do, well, or 300, you would make it work really well for those 5 to 6 use cases. You know, maybe it was accounting, cost of material analysis, right, and all that sort of stuff. And so it did really well. Now, sometimes we lose sight of that and we end up like, you know, creating systems that before they have really addressed the top 5 points, they already show you this big, you know, big menu of all the cool things you can do with it. And maybe they don't do it, you know, it doesn't do everything as well as it used to. So maybe that's what it is, but, mm-hmm. but ultimately, you know, an ERP system or just accounting, if you think about it from a tabular data or the tables supporting it, probably 4 to 5 tables in total, you can probably, you know, deal with it, right? I mean, accounting, what is it? Like it's the ledger and then the account types.
Yeah.
The accounts themselves. Yeah, I can't think of anything else. Oh, of course you need, you know, the user role, the users table and the roles table. And that's it, like, you know, 4 or 5 tables. And maybe that's what a lot of these core systems had back in the day. So you could actually model your business on that. But nowadays, you know, that's just maybe that simple a model doesn't exist, or maybe it does and we just don't know about it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I think like there's nothing that's like simple anymore when you're looking at, you know, software, even components of what would be an enterprise software, like the CRM, you know, even like you look at some of these, they're incredibly complicated. And yeah, like I think there's a lot of neat features, right? But I agree with you, like the maybe it's almost like the focus is a little bit too broad. So then when you get to the user, it gets a little bit overwhelming. And you're probably, I would say in my experience with a lot of ERPs, it usually like we're only using a small fraction of all the features available. Right. Like that, and I don't think that like that's been like my experience. Like I think a lot of people don't utilize all the features that come with the software. And a lot of it's probably just because of not knowing how to use it. Right. Like that use case that what how can we leverage the software to do that? So I think that does happen a lot.
And one thing you also mentioned, Tom, with your experience, which is really interesting and really telling, that after you created these macros, you know, then the tech team or the IT team was able to develop it in a day. That's an important thing also not to be overlooked, right? And especially at scale. So, you know, if... Again, I could be wrong on this, but in many organizations, and there's nothing... Anyway, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, but I'm in tech, so I get to say this, I guess, to some extent, is that sometimes tech-enabled purchases or tech-enabled solutions may not necessarily be the right one without enough input from the business stakeholders. And you can say conversely the same way, right? Like just pure business users may not necessarily know what goes on in the internal systems, how it will integrate. Sometimes, you know, what is advertised from a prepackaged solution or even a consulting firm like mine, not mine, but, you know, in general, it could, you know, the advertising and the reality may not match for that particular buyer. But that bringing that the business user or the subject matter expert in how that system will be used, you know, really early on in the purchase or the planning phase is key, because, you know, what you said about, hey, a lot of these ERP systems have these modules that people probably don't use or don't know about. Well, I mean, that's excellent. If the need wasn't there, or if the need wasn't really extracted from the business users that this thing is needed, of course, nobody's going to remember it, and it's going to just, you know, collect dust, right? And you buy this big, ginormous ERP system, and all you really needed was, I don't know, let's use PlanBoard as an example. All you needed was a good scheduler. Meanwhile, you know, why implement all the rest of the system, right? So,
yeah, paying for a lot of features that kind of just get in the way after a while, right, too, right? That's the other. Right. Example there. I know like one that happens a lot in inventory systems is there was a trend to create a unique identifier, almost like a serial number, for every inventory transaction. So if you had a six pack of drinks and you took out three of them, they would create a unique serial number now for the three that were taken out and three that remained. And like that's like the feature that like pretty much like all inventory systems will now say that, because they talk about the traceability and importance of that. But in some operations, like that's just more noise. That's just more data. That's just more gets in the way. So again, it's like one of those things where it's a feature for some, but not necessarily every business needs those features. And I think I think you brought up a great point about the business side, the business stakeholders, when it comes to working with the software IT And I think I'm gonna get on to the business stakeholders because that's the side that I'm from. You know, the biggest thing is just not taking the time to understand the software side. And I'm not talking about learning to code. I'm just talking about taking the time to understand some of the limitations or how the system's set up, asking the questions, can we do this or can we do that? And actually investing the time to do it will give you far better results. Because that is, you know, I don't know in how many meetings I've been in where the business stakeholder will pose a request or a question, but because they don't take the time to ask the 5 follow-up questions, the response they'll get from the IT team will be, we can't do that, or we don't have the capability to do that. But the reality is, as a business stakeholder, you know, if there's something that you imagine you want it to happen, like that didn't like magically come in your brain like from nothing. Like you're seeing that because you're seeing the system, you're working in it. So you have an idea of what the system does, what data is there. But there's a disconnect sometimes to try to explain what I'm interacting with the system and what I would like to do. And it's almost like you need a translator to come in. And I know that's where, you know, I'd say is the biggest gap internally in organizations, where you lose that between the business stakeholder and the developers. Like it's just that disconnect. And again, for me, it's the business stakeholders that need to learn a little bit more, be a little bit more thorough, not be discouraged right away. Just try to go in and figure out, you know, how to do that. So I think that's probably like the biggest thing that I feel like business stakeholders need to have some general awareness when it comes to systems. And that I think would go a long way in creating a better experience for everybody involved.
100%, 100%, and maybe this is a good place we can kind of conclude a little bit too. But it's interesting. You come from this from the business side of it. I'm coming from the tech side of it. But it's really important to recognize, and you know, this is a plug for both of us, I guess, to some extent. But like, you know, that translation layer, having the ability to kind of empathetically, you know, switch your mind frame or language, whatever you want to call it, to see the other side and then be able to translate. It's huge, right? Because so many projects I've been involved with, and you have been as well, in which tech or, you know, production outside of tech is the same way, but tech happens to be, you know, constraints are less pronounced these days. So, you know, if somebody on the business told me, you know, I want a 2000 story building, the engineers will laugh you out of the room and the person will know that you can't do that this day and age. But with software, it's a little bit more abstract and it's a bit harder. But, you know, on so many occasions, you end up, you know, not doing that translation, not discussing it well enough. And then, you know, a tech team or a vendor or a provider goes off, you know, comes back with 3 orders of magnitude larger scale solution for a non-existing problem and cost, just because they didn't fully understand or nobody took the time of saying, well, do we really need this versus that, or what are some of the options? So that translation layer, I know you and I have worked together, and that's why we continue to work with from different sides. We come to it to the same place, but it's definitely important and, you know, looked over more easily, right? So with that, I mean, we talked about, so the questions that came in, we did talk about some of this stuff. Maybe we need to do a follow-up on this, but maybe rapid fire. What was the most interesting system, like a business application you used, which was based on AS400?
Yeah, so for me, it was all manufacturing. So
ERP manufacturing.
ERP manufacturing, yep.
Okay. What was the most frustrating part of using it? I think we've talked about some of it, which is funny because the frustrating part may have been the blessing in disguise because it wasn't as flexible. And then what from that experience can you take modern days? Yeah, we kind of, you know, we talked about the translation layer. If there's anything else on your mind, you know, maybe you can comment on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, to the modern days, I think the robustness is the probably like the biggest takeaway, because we talk a lot about, you know, security is a huge issue. You know, recently I saw an article, something about, you know, if you're in the IoT business and like you don't have a strong security package and strategy, like, you know, you're going to be out of business very quickly. So I think like that security and robustness, I think, kind of go together. So I think that's the biggest takeaway. And then the other one is, you know, maybe there is something about less features, more focus, is a benefit to the organization.
Less is more,
right? Like, you know, I mean, it's the Google model, right? It's just, yep, search, put in your keywords. You know, I mean, you remember the old search engines. So, I mean, I think sometimes less is more. I'm excited about all this new technology that's coming out that we get to play with, and very excited about living in a time of industry 4.0, because honestly, this is where you need that software connection. Like, there's a lot, you know, we talked about, you know, there's this flood of data you can get, but it's learning how to utilize it that'll give you that competitive edge, right? That's the exciting times that we're living at now. You really can do so much with technology.
Yeah, absolutely. That is awesome. Well, my friend, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. And it was just so much fun to, you know, sort of go down the memory lane of AS400 and some of the past experiences. It seems like we've got a great candidate for the next round of macros. Maybe it'll be hands-on. Maybe we'll do, you know, instead of, we planned this to be audio, it ended up being a webinar anyway. Maybe we'll do a webinar in which, you know, we'll share a screen and show some fun stuff too with the macros. Oh, it could get pretty, pretty interesting. But anyway, really appreciate your time. Really appreciate you, Tom. Always, always a pleasure. And we'll talk soon.
Thank you so much, Sam. Thank you for hosting.
Take care. Thank you.